Christine Arnoux on ABC Radio.
For families in lockdown, homeschooling has been a steep learning curve. But remote education is not a new premise. For the past 70 years, School of the Air has been providing the kids in remote area in remote Australia with a quality education via radio, telephone, and more recently, the internet. One of the most successful School of the Air alumnus is Tanya Heeslip, and she's an accomplished lawyer who was raised on a cattle farm north of Alice Springs in the 60s. And she's gone on to write three books, including An Alice Girl, where she did a deep dive into the history of School of the Air. Tanya Heeslip, welcome to Weekend Evenings.
Oh, hello, Christine. It's so lovely to be here.
It's wonderful to have you. Now, who invented the School of the Air and why?
Well, this was the exciting thing that I really came across when I was doing the research for my second book, An Alice Girl. I wanted to understand where had this amazing school come from. I'd grown up with it. For me, it was a completely normal way to do school, but it never occurred to me to look at how it began. And it was because of this amazing woman, Adelaide Mietke, who in her 60s, a single woman, back in the day, incredibly brave, went out on a tour with John Flynn, travelling around the outback looking at the needs of children. And she discovered that when she came across children, they ran from her. They were terrified of strangers. They didn't know how to connect socially. And she happened then to watch the John Flynn Royal Flying Doctor Service in action, where doctors and nurses spoke to people out in the bush and gave them advice over the air. And she thought, well, if it can be done for medical reasons, why not education? And so she lobbied and gathered people around her and worked through the 1940s, right up until 1951, when School of the Air was born in Alice. And as part of the Royal Flying Doctor Service, they had teachers and a little studio, and they started giving classes to children over a 1,600 kilometre square radius.
What was it like back then? Like, walk us through your morning as a school student, School of the Air student.
It was so much fun. We did correspondence school lessons as well, which were written. So school in our little cattle station schoolroom began at 7:30, finished at 1. Then we had to go out and ride horses and muster cattle and be useful. But during that morning, we had half an hour for each grade. So imagine it was my grade 5, for example. We went up to grade 7. So for half an hour, I'd sit there on the radio, and Mrs. Hodder, my teacher from Alice Springs School of the Air, would say, "Good morning, girls and boys. This is Mrs. Hodder from VJD. Can you read me? Over." And all these kids would call in through the static, go, "Yes, good morning, Mrs. Hodder, we can read you. Over." And then for half an hour each day, she would take us through a different kind of learning. One day it would be, "Now repeat these words after me and spell them," or "I want you to practice singing this song," and we'd all have to sing back to her, or we'd have to read aloud. And it was very creative. You know, we couldn't see her, and we couldn't see the children in our class, but we could draw faces around their voices and imagine. And so the days were, it was like theatre, really.
You talk about that she must have, the teacher, she must have had to have been really quite creative. Do you,
yes.
What do you recall? What are your memories of your School of the Air teacher?
Oh, that she was like the queen. I thought she must be the queen because she had a voice that was so proper. And bear in mind, I'd grown up with Stockman, and there was this beautifully spoken, cultivated voice that came through the static. And I imagined her tall and willowy, and when I met her, that's exactly what she was like. And I thought I'd curtsy, Christine. I thought that's what I'd have to do. She just had a sense of what bush kids needed. They needed to be drawn out of their isolation and out of their shyness. They needed to be encouraged to tell stories about their own life. They needed to be given songs that they could connect to. So she played us songs like "Here Comes Brumby Jack," which was all about, a man chasing brumbies, which we all related to. And so we'd sing those songs back, and then she'd say, now what's the noun here and what's the verb? And she created a way of looking at learning as something that was fun.
Describe what your life was like outside of school for you during your childhood.
Yes. Well, it was pretty amazing. We didn't realise that, of course, at the time, but we'd have school in the morning, and then as soon as that was finished and after lunch, we'd be straight to the stockyards. We'd have to go out and bring in cattle. We'd be helping shoe horses. We'd be fixing fences. We'd be helping pull boars. And then there were the musters, and sometimes we'd hear Dad's boots crunch on the gravel in the middle of school, and we'd be pulled out of school to go on a big muster, and school would have to wait and be done on the weekends. And then in school holidays, we'd be in the stock camp for 3 to 4 weeks at a time. And we were just little kids, but we were like little men doing big men's work. And of course, kids on all stations were the stable part of the workforce, because stockmen came and went. A lot of them were drifters and drovers, but the kids were always there. So we had to learn to work really hard, ride well, learn to muster and understand cattle. And so we had a lot of responsibility from an early age, but in this place of freedom, because we just had hundreds of miles of emptiness. And so there was so much space, and there was the real opportunity at least in my case, for my imagination to flow.
I'm talking to lawyer, author and big fan of School of the Air, which is turning 70 this year, Tanya Heaslip. She's gone on from living on a remote cattle farm to teaching across Europe and now works as a lawyer in Alice Springs. But I wanted to go back, Tanya, and get you to tell us about when you went to boarding school at the age of 12. What was that like for you?
That was the turning point of my life. I think to this day, I had life before boarding school and then life after. So life before, joyous, filled with creativity, freedom. We ran around in jeans and boots. That was our uniform. And then overnight, I was sent 1,600 kilometres south to a Victorian-style all-girls boarding school where we were in tunics and ties and within stone walls, and there were rules and bells and homesickness that was indescribable. And we knew it was coming because all bush kids had to go to boarding school because there weren't the secondary education opportunities back in the 60s and 70s, 70s when I went. And the Territory government paid parents a subsidy to send their children away, but nothing could prepare bush kids, and I was just one of many, for that shock of being dragged out of their land. It wasn't just a connection to family and home, but the land, and then into prison, which was what it was like. And to take a 12-year-old child away from their family and institutionalise them is not normal. It was done for a very good reason, and on balance, I was very lucky, but it was so hard, and there's no sort of way around that. And I wrote my third book about this, and I had a group of boarders helping me write it, and at the end one of them said to me, I wish we'd written this book years ago, it would have saved me hundreds of dollars in therapy.
Well, you've described two quite unique education experiences here, your School of the Air and boarding school. How has that shaped your view on education practices?
Well, I think the creative way we grew up and studied as children was just marvellous. It set me up for life. And if any child could have a primary education like that, I think they'd be incredibly lucky. I think if you can have a secondary education without the boarding element, you're also incredibly lucky. Boarding school is not conducive to good education because it's a prison, and most of the kids in there are very unhappy, and it's full of rules and homesick students. But the education itself and the school was separate to the boarding house. That was fantastic. So overall, I felt really lucky. I had the chance to go to study with teachers who really stretched me. So primary was creative, secondary with these great teachers really made me think, made me learn, helped me to understand and develop the analytical side of my brain, I guess. And that's what led me into law. So I had the best of both, really, looking back, minus the boarding school bits, of course.
School of the Air certainly led you on to some wonderful opportunities. You were the first student to go on to practice law.
The first School of the Air student to study and graduate in law and practice. It was quite remarkable. I received a telegram, because of course that's what we had back then, when I graduated from the Chief Minister of the Northern Territory. And that was such an honour, because, well, you know, I was the first. And it was seemed... it's really interesting. People very often think that if you study remotely, and I've had these questions put to me, you know, you won't go on to do anything or achieve anything. But in fact, most kids I know went on to achieve a great deal, and I was one of the very lucky ones.
And that passion for education took you over to Europe. What were some of the unforgettable moments from that period?
Well, I was able to work in the Czech Republic 4 years after the Berlin Wall fell, and communism, for all intents and purposes, had gone, but the structures were still there. So it was a country in transition. But what they wanted most of all was for their children to study English from a native speaker, as they called anyone who came from an English speaking country, and for their professionals to have a chance to apply English to their professional world. So through a whole series of interesting and serendipitous circumstances, I ended up teaching English to the Minister of Justice and judges of the High Court. And I also taught high school students. And I think that my School of the Air training really stood me in good stead, because with the students, the high school students, I could see them, but we didn't have a language in common, which was the opposite to School of the Air, where we had language in common, but I couldn't see the students and the teacher. So I used the same games that I'd learned in School of the Air quite instinctively. I taught all these students Waltzing Matilda, because I played guitar and sang, not very well, but well enough to teach all these kids useful expressions for the outside world, like swag and billabong.
So were these some of the examples of techniques that you learnt from School of the Air that you used to teach in Prague?
Yes, and it was unconscious. It was only afterwards I realised this is what Mrs. Hodder did. This is how she taught us. It was very interesting seeing how all those years on, that learning, that training just kicked in. And then I applied a very similar approach when I was working with the judges and the Minister of Justice. And that was, I said, all right, let's look at your documents, which were in Czech or part English, and let's work at translating them into English. So I worked directly with them on what was practical rather than out of a textbook, English 1, English 2. We threw them away. And so I worked on the Georgian constitution when Georgia was coming out into its own and seeking help from the Czech Republic. And I worked on human rights documents because the Czech Republic wanted to become part of the EU in its sort of new world. So it was the same approach, very practical, creative way of study, not through a textbook, not lineal, quite abstract. And it was fun. And we all had so much fun, and they were perhaps some of the greatest experiences, I think, of my life.
With us here is Tanya Heeslip, lawyer, our author and big fan of School of the Air, which is turning 70 this year. She's gone on from living on a remote cattle farm to teaching across Europe, and now works as a lawyer in Alice Springs. Tanya, what's life like for you now?
Well, I've spent many, many years working as a lawyer in an office in different parts of Australia and sort of treading that lawyer path. Now I freelance, which I really love. It gives me the flexibility to write. I feel incredibly lucky. I've come full circle back to Central Australia, and I'm able to be here during the 70-year celebrations of School of the Air and be part of them. And so I've been able to give talks to people who have come there and to be able to share my stories with visitors, which has been joyful, absolutely joyful, because I'm just so passionate about what it gave me and gave so many students. And I think also being back in this land gave me the chance to write and complete my three books, because I was here, I'd come full circle really back to those childhood years. So it's a very busy and a creative life, much more creative for me at least than sitting behind a desk in a law firm. So I feel very, very grateful for that.
A lot of Australian parents are trying to wrap their heads around homeschooling with lockdowns. Mm. What could School of the Air teach parents, teach them all?
That's such a good question, Christine, because interestingly, people from all over the world have actually been contacting School of the Air here to ask that very same advice. I've had people from America, from Switzerland, from Africa calling, and they've even had a student who was in Alice Springs on School of the Air, now in Manchester, still doing School of the Air because they just love the system so much. He's up at the crack of dawn, I think, at about 3 a.m. or something to do his classes. But the kinds of lessons that they are sharing, which really can be shared anywhere, are you don't have to be face-to-face to study. You can use different ways of learning that actually take children into a far more creative space by giving them the opportunity to think and to learn and to work with books, and also to perhaps have more silence in some ways in their day because they're not in a busy, noisy classroom, but they've got the chance to perhaps have more time to do their work. And there are different tools that can be used around song and music and dance that can help. And also, of course, now with the internet, School of the Air here effectively uses what's like a Zoom setup for their lessons. And so children studying remotely can still access their classmates and perhaps their teacher in that same way and not miss out. So I think School of the Air has shown that it doesn't matter if you can't be in the classroom, you can still study just as well, only differently and in some ways far more creatively.
I think it's fascinating how other countries have drawn an interest from School of the Air during this time.
It's remarkable. I think the Indonesian embassy recently contacted the Australian embassy in Indonesia and asked them to co-write a document with them on this remote learning so that they could share it within Indonesia. It's remarkable, people coming from completely different countries but with that same goal of talking to an organisation, a very humble organisation that's just been plodding away doing this stuff for 70 years without fanfare, and suddenly they have lessons that the whole world needs.
What a wonderful story. Tanya, thank you so much for your time on Weekend Evenings.
Oh, Christine, thanks. I've loved the chance to chat to you.
Thank you. Tanya Heaslip there, talking about 70 years of School of the Air and the incredible road less travelled. It's led her down.
Christine Arnoux.